Live at Nightmare Studios in Houston, Texas. You're listening to the Genghis and Redman Show, where two jamokes drink and rate craft beer while they chew the fat about the world of hard rock and heavy metal, followed up by one-on-one interviews with veterans and newcomers in the industry. I'm your official announcer, Joey Clams, and here to introduce themselves is tonight's special guest.
Hey, this is Tracy G, and I give you the right to rock, motherfuckers.
Without further ado, here are two co-hosts who are so metal, they rust when they sweat. It's Genghis and Ragman.
Hi everybody, this is Tracy G. You're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show. Horns up, brother. Yearly adventure to the G Factory. Here with Mr. Tracy G here in California, in the midst of his studio, talking about music. So it's in the studio with Tracy G and Ragman. Tracy,
hey,
it's been too fucking long, brother.
How you doing, dude? Nice to see you.
You too, man. We had our celebratory lunch.
Yeah.
At our favorite spot, and then wanted to chat some music and see what you've been up to, dude. It's been probably about a year since you've been on the show, which is way too long. You know you can come back anytime, right?
Yeah, I just busy in my studio doing my thing.
What do you say we're going to do like inside the studio with Tracy G and just talk music? And then, whatever you're doing, too, but that'd be a lot of fun. It's a deep stories, and when you're coming up to the 80s scene and stuff like that, it'd be fun to talk about, man.
No problem.
Well, the first thing I want to bring up, first off, what have you been up to? I'm trying to think. I think the last time we talked, was it Tramp, when it got redistributed through MVD?
Yeah, probably that. The CD Tramp, Tracy G Group. It came. I put it out myself, and then Derek, his name's Derek. I forget his last name. He owns that like little record company. What was it called?
MVD.
Yeah. And he re-put it out. So he put it out. He put it where the lyrics are inside of it now. Because my version, I didn't have the lyrics inside of it. So he added a few more pages to it. And spread it out a little bit more for us. I think it helped a little bit, spread it out.
Well, I was going to ask you, as far as, I mean, because you've done a lot of your music on your own for a very long time, with getting that bump by Eric with MVD, I think MVD just distributed it. I'm not sure what the label was, but did you see quite a few more sales? Did you get a little more pop? I got to say, I think I saw you in like
a little bit.
Revolver magazine, little ad for Best Buy or something when they still sold CDs.
A little bit. I mean, I noticed it a little bit in different places and a little bit more. Sold a few more. I think he's the one that was selling them.
Oh, okay.
Kind of, yeah, you know, and because he spread it out in some stores. And I just have it on my website, but he put it wherever, like all over the place. So it did okay.
I know we were excited, Genghis and I, that you know you got getting product out there in a, I guess, a bigger form where you could sell on Amazon and stuff like that. Is your normal stuff available on Amazon or just on the Tracy G site?
Some of it's on CD Baby. I'm trying to get it all where it's as many places as I could put it, but yeah. Kind of takes a little bit of work, but my sister helps me a lot with that stuff. So
with Tramp, did you? I know you played around the California area. How did the gigs go? And then after, I guess you played that. I mean, you decided to start working. I know the last time we talked, you talked about doing an all instrumental record, which is what we're going to address today.
Yeah.
But what? How long did that cycle go, or did you just jump into the next project?
Yeah, it was just a few gigs. We did a few gigs, and it's kind of hard to draw people. We had a few people. We played a couple around here. A couple were further, maybe, you know, 40, 50 miles away. But the crowd response was good, but it wasn't a big crowd, though. It wasn't that big of a crowd. So,
after you guys supported Tramp, you guys went right back in the studio pretty much, started writing songs again, did Land of Make-Believe. What was it? I know we talked pretty close to when the record came out, and you were already talking about an instrumental record at that point. Did you guys go out and play any gigs, or did you just go straight into the instrumental thing?
The Tracy G Group was like, I've had this group for like a lot of years, and it's gone from different singers, vocal stuff, to a lot of instrumental stuff. Instrumental has always been my passion and my main thing, so I always seem to want to go back to that for some reason. So after Tramp, we played a lot. Then I'm learning my studio, getting better at it. Went into Atlanta Make Believe. Great record, lots of good songs, lots of good vocals with Mike and everything. But after that record was done, I was kind of just like really feeling to go instrumental for some, you know, whatever reasons. I just wanted to concentrate on some more of my instrumental stuff because that's kind of where I started. With the instrumental stuff. So we didn't play any gigs to play any of these songs off of Land of Make-Believe. Mike has made quite a few videos for it, though. So if they float around, they're floating around the internet and stuff. Videos are cool, but we didn't play any of the songs live, at least yet. I can always go back, and if I, you know, when I play again, I can always pull from if I want. But I just started doing an instrumental, and this year alone I did two instrumental records, as you know. So,
well, I know since I've known you, we've known each other about 10, 11 years now, you have always been a guy that just wants to create. So I kind of get it. And like I said, when last time we spoke, Land of Make-Believe's just done, and you're already talking instrumental record and ideas you had for this, which turned out to be Tarantula Ditch, which is really killer, by the way. So congratulations on that, man.
First I put out in January, February of 2019, I put out like an anthology thing, which is just my greatest hits or my favorite tunes of my own off of my catalog that are instrumental that I like. So I put a collection of those out first, and then I started on this Tarantula Ditch because of the title was, I thought, so cool, which came from the bass player, Randy. As soon as you said, you know, there's a sign on the side of the road when I go to the river, and it says Tarantula Ditch. I go, what? It says that? He goes, and he took a picture of it, or his wife took a picture of it, and let me see it, and that became the picture on the back of the CD.
Oh, wow.
That's what that picture is. It's an actual little ditch called Tarantula Ditch, and I thought that's... Randy said, too, that's got to be the name of a song or and a CD, because it's just so cool to us. That's where that came from. And then I just started putting together all these songs, and my goal was to, and every song, have a guest guitar player, another guitar player. I thought that would be different for me. I usually just play by myself, but not with another guitar player. So another guitar player in every song. So I called almost every guy that I admire, that I like, some local guys, some guys that live, you know, back east and even in Japan, and asked these different guys to play on it. So that's what Tarantula Ditch has. I think 10 songs or 11 songs. 11 different guitar players. Should I name the guitar players?
Well, I just wanted to say that to me, the album has kind of an old school feel, like the old Shrapnel instrumental records for me.
Okay.
And I really dig that what you've done here by bringing in the guest guitar players. Like, you can handle it all yourself, but adding in that new flavor, to me, like I said, I got a Shrapnel type vibe on this record.
I did my best to, whoever was the guest guitar player on a given song, I tried to write the song for the guy, like what I thought his kind of style and his vibe was. The song that Rowan Robertson plays on,
Everlasting Rainbow.
Everlasting Rainbow. He played with Dio. I played with Dio. Rainbow is a Dio word. So Everlasting Rainbow is kind of like, it's actually a riff that I played in the 90s for Ronnie.
Really?
Yeah. And he goes, oh, that kind of reminds me of Rainbow in the Dark. Kind of, just the way the riff went a little bit, because maybe we can use that. But we never got to it, so it didn't ever make the album. But I always remembered that he did like the opening riff, so I told that to Rowan. He goes, let's do that. So we made an instrumental out of it, and Rowan's playing on that, and the connection is kind of, you know, the Dio thing.
Yeah.
And in every song, it's kind of, I wrote it kind of what I thought about the way the guy played guitar. Great White, you got Mark Kendall. I grew up with him, kind of know him really well. Kind of a blues player, so his tune is kind of bluesy. It's like number 9 or 10 or something, 11 or 9.
Yeah, A Blues Day in Hell.
A Blues Day in Hell, that's what it's called, yeah. And it's like a heavy blues groove for Mark, because I thought that was kind of in his wheelhouse. Let him do his thing in there, you know. So anyway, every song is kind of tailored to the guy the best I could. One more, Van Toshi, it's called.
Mm-hmm.
The guitar player's name's Toshi. Lives in Japan. Awesome guitar player. I met him through Ray Luzera from Korn. Good friends. Great, great guy. Great player. He lives in Japan. He was in David Lee Roth. He was in David Lee Roth in the 90s with Ray.
Oh, really?
Toshi was. Mm-hmm. So, the song I gave to him is kind of like a little bit Van Halen-y, a little bit like, Pop for Teacher, a little bit. Because, you know, the Van Halen connection. So I had him play on that one. So every single one has a little weird connection to something that the guy's done or just the way I think the guy plays or, you know. And I'm really proud of it. I think it came out cool, and I passed them all around. I sold a few, and not that many people know about it yet, but that's the way it goes.
Well, so you're writing the songs for the guys. First off, I guess you're getting out your black book. Like, okay, who would I want to, you know, write a song for, basically play on my record?
Yeah, well...
How was the reception once you sent the track? Did anybody come to the studio?
Yeah.
Or was it...
Half the guys came here. Half the guys came in here. Half the guys aren't from here. They're not here. So they had to do it in their own studio and then email it to me, and I had to fly it in there, you know. So some of the guys came in here, though. It's pretty cool, and they did it right here. And, awesome. No bad vibes, just fun. I mean, it was great. It was like, you know, just cool. There was a lot of players that I asked. Some didn't get back to me. Some were too busy. Everybody's schedule, you know, but I could make a part two easily, because there's so many guys that I still know that I didn't get on this one that I'd like to have, you know. But every one of these guys I know, I respect them. They're all cool players, and they're all a little bit different. Not everybody plays the same.
Right.
So it's kind of cool. Yeah.
Well, so say the song you did with Rowan. Do you send him
the music?
Just the music, or is your solo on there yet, or do you let him rip and then you cut and put in your stuff?
I think my solo, I sent it to Rowan. I think my solo might have been there already, so he could hear the vibe I was doing to it, and he would know where to play, type of thing. Maybe not all of them. I can't remember. Maybe not all of them had me playing yet. I would just tell them where I wanted them to play. You know, some I played on, some I didn't, before they played on it.
Mm-hmm. Another one I want to bring up is The Baron Lives. I really dig that. To me, it almost has...
Oh,
I love
it,
dude.
Do you know who that is playing guitar?
I don't know him, but it has like a McAlpine vibe to me.
That's the guy that we've been talking about all day, Paul. The guy that turned me on all this stuff that I'm in that other project with.
Yeah.
That's Paul. Paul Alfred. Yeah, he's playing. The Baron Lives is off of Baron von Troglenstein. There's another CD I have.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember that CD?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that song was on that. I just revised it.
Gotcha.
Kind of revised it, so I call it The Baron Lives, because that title was the title of the song I kind of relived it, so to speak.
Nice.
Paul's playing the other guitar player on that song. Yeah.
Well, that was one of the ones that brought me back to that shrapnel kind of vibe, McAlpine, you know, back in the 80s, mm-hmm. where he would, like, have Lynch or Jeff Watson, and sure. Maximum Security was, what a great record, you know. But that, I got that vibe from that song. I was like, I really dig this, man. It's really cool.
Yeah, I forgot. I like that song a lot.
Another one I want to bring up is Jimmy Strethouse, and that's with Jimmy Bell from House of Lords. That's a killer track. I didn't know you knew Jimmy.
I didn't. I met him through Paul.
Oh, really?
Paul involves, you know, I was looking for guitar players. Check out this guy Jimmy Bell. Paul knew him. I didn't know him. I checked him out. I'm like,
dude's a monster.
Fucking hell, dude. Super cool guy. And just he was so cool to do it. And now he just got the gig in Autograph, I guess.
Oh, he did.
He's in Autograph. That band Autograph. House of Lords. He's all over. You know, he's doing a bunch of stuff. Amazing guy. Amazing player. Just rips. And so, you know, you heard the song with you. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's killer.
I dig that.
And I had to play after him. I'm like, what am I supposed to play? Like, you know, yeah. It's great. It's good. You know, you got to... I love to get different kind of guys, different kind of styles. Then it opens your creativity up to all kinds of weird shit.
Well, and that's what I like about the record. There's a good variety. And you're thinking outside the box on some of the tracks, because basically you're trying to write for the guy, which is... Have you ever done that before?
A little bit. I mean, a little bit. I just... What I know about the player or whatever, and I try to put something in what I think might fit his... A little bit in his wheelhouse, but let him go out of the box too. A little bit, maybe. Not make it so typical. You know, that's my whole thing. It's not to be so typical.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's interesting, we talked about this a little bit at lunch, is the way you write. When you wrote for Dio, you were pushing riffs. You weren't trying to redo Holy Diver or Last in Line. You were like, this is where Dio needs to be, heavy as you've ever fucking been.
Modern and heavy. Nothing against the classics. You can't touch Holy Diver and Heaven and Hell and, you know, great, and I get a chance to write with a guy like that, and I'm going to just try to push him somewhere further. Everybody might not get it, but that's the chance you take, unless you want to just go backwards and do the same stuff he's already done. I didn't want to do that. I wanted to push the guy in the heavy black forest, you know what I mean? Yeah.
I've always wondered, and we kind of hit it a little bit at lunch was, you know, writing within Dio. I mean, you're coming out of World War III, you're doing your own thing, you get plugged into Dio. When you used to write with Ronnie, was it just you riffing and then he would say, okay, I like that, work on that? Or how did it work within the Dio band?
Vinny would start a drum beat or I would start a guitar riff. Together, we'd both come in. Jeff Pilson, same thing. Sometimes he had a riff. You just jump on. Everything was pretty heavy and heavier than what he's done. Just a little fact that no Dio record is tuned to A flat. It's all A440. It's all standard tuning. No big deal, but it's all standard tuning. But when he played with Sabbath, they would tune down. Mm-hmm. That just helps the sound a little bit.
Yeah.
It helps your chording and sound. And I was already tuned to E flat from World War III. So we just went to E flat. Everything was heavier already. Just try to take that great, great voice that Ronnie had and make it push it. Push it. Just, I don't know how else to put it. Just push. Don't lay back and let him push you. Push him. Listen to the song Pain. And that says it all right there. He's being pushed. That's why he's singing like no other. Because he had that in him to do that. Yeah. But he needs someone to give him some shit. Yeah.
I guess, I find this interesting because we've talked about some of the other guitar players in Dio before. But you were a young gun. And you had a lot of balls on you to be pushing one of the greatest singers of metal ever, and him taking it like, okay, here we go.
I was about 30.
Yeah.
So I wasn't so
not too young. Yeah.
I wasn't, you know, wasn't too young, not too old, in the middle somewhere. But I loved Black Sabbath from 14 years old, so. Not, you know, as I learned to play and as I went, and Tony Iommi, you know, and all the Zeppelin and Deep Purple, all my things I learned when I was starting, I just always kept the Sabbath thing where the chords were like angry and heavy and heavier. So then the band World War III, it was getting heavy, and that was pretty heavy stuff right there. And then you got the rhythm section from Vinny and Jimmy,
yeah,
heavy, heavy. They needed to go heavier, and they did with World War III. And then Dio, I started with the same rhythm section, and now you got the greatest singer ever, and you just got to go heavy. And so all my influences was dark and heavy and kind of industrial sounds, sound effects, and nothing really pretty. Not lean so much on the melodic shit. I let his vocals be melodic, but the guitars had to be crunchy, heavy. And they were getting heavier, too, because the second record, I got the baritone guitars that were tuned even lower.
Mm-hmm.
And but, you know, maybe went too far away from Dio. The Dio that people were used to, they didn't really get it. But so I'm just into experimenting and creating. I'm not trying to be the flavor of the month or nothing.
Did he ever push, say, on Angry Machines that, hey, Tracy, we should get a little more melodic on this? Or was he just digging what you were dishing out to him for the most part?
No, but some things got... Some, you know, we dried up the production. He produced it. We didn't have an outside producer like we did on Strange Highways. He produced it. The record company he was with was trying to get him to kind of go back to the Holy Diver sound of the 1982 or 3 or whatever that was. And, so, you know, a little less soloing, because in the 90s, I guess solos went away, and we weren't supposed to solo. And not that anything we did was the right move, but it was what it was. And so it was a little bit of a fight, trying to find out where he fit in. I thought Strange Highway, we should have just kept getting heavier myself.
Agreed.
But it wasn't my band, so, you know.
Do you think, I guess, just to talk about today, where we are now, as far as guitar players and shredding, I think we're almost twofold for what we were back in the 80s before it died in the 90s, with so many great guitar players out there now, shredding being in music that you sometimes wonder, it's like, wow, they got a solo? You know, I think that shredding's really come back over the last few years. And guitar playing is, you know, very cool again. It's been very cool again for a while, but I see more instrumental records coming out and stuff like that, you know, hence Tarantula Ditch, with guys doing more instrumental. You know, Gus G's done some instrumental stuff. There's a lot more of that coming out now that we didn't see years ago.
True.
And I think there's more of an audience for it now, like it was back in the 80s, wouldn't you say?
For a while, maybe 90s, you know. Because when grunge and all that came in, it kind of was this new thing, and it wasn't all about guitar solos. But it sort of slowed it down. But now, you know, you see on YouTube, there's all these 9-year-old girls ripping your face off. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's just amazing. The guys are playing upside down and with both their hands and 12 fingers and shit. You know, so I mean, it's blown wide open now. It's like whatever. Still kind of hard to make money selling your music and all that because of the whole, you know, the way it is. But no, there's a lot of amazing shit out there now, and you see because of YouTube, you can see these 10-year-olds and young guys just ripping.
Yeah.
And they might have always been out there, but back in the 80s and the 90s, you know, you couldn't see YouTube. You know, you couldn't see them yet, so they didn't exist. You didn't even think about it because they probably were, but you just couldn't see them. Now it's like, you know, unlocked where you go, oh, you think you're pretty good? Watch this.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so all that's left to do is just be yourself and just, you know, listen to everything, take it in, but when it comes time to do it, try to just have some kind of, you know, uniqueness where you're yourself and you can tell if you're going to do an arpeggio or a whatever they're called, tapping thing, cool. Try to make it sound like you. Don't sound like a million other people. Right. You just sound the same. If you're going to do something, make it so people go, oh, that's that guy. That's Zach Wilde. You know, that's Jeff Beck.
Yeah.
That's Sal DiMeola. That's, you know, whatever. Whoever you are, you know, whatever it is. To me, that's what's most important is having a signature. Not to everybody, but that's my thing.
Yeah, tone, feeling, you know.
Exactly.
And then,
yeah, everything. Slow down. Speed up if you want, but sound like you. Don't just sound like everybody, because it's like, so what? Like, have some originality, yeah.
Well, I want to bring up one more track on the new record, Voyager. And I'm going to have to cheat here to see who played on that with you.
That's Grotz. That's my friend.
Man, that's a really cool track, and
oh,
it's
like,
yeah, it's almost I don't want to say progressive, but I kind of do, if that makes any sense.
It's like a ballad. We'll be right back. Gratz can play anything. Gratz is a local guy. Real underrated. Not a lot of people know who he is, but Gratz, he's a good friend of mine. Great guitar player, can play anything. He could have played on any of the tracks. And he's not predictable. He's really weird.
Yeah.
That's why I like him when he plays. So I gave him the weirdest track on the album, which is the ballad. It's like a ballad, you know. It's kind of like a ballad, we call it. And he whipped out a slide, and he did all this, like, cool sounding,
oh, yeah,
kind of mystical shit. Yeah, he's just weird like that. So I think it was perfect for... It just sets a whole different mood than anything else.
Yeah, really.
It's its own thing. He loved it. He did a great job. He came here and did it. He lives kind of locally around here.
Well, to me, like you said, it almost has kind of a progressive vibe to it. Maybe with all the different sounds and what he's doing and what you're doing. And I really dig it, dude. It's really cool.
It's cool. Thanks. Yeah, it's different. It's different.
How challenging is it to write an instrumental record opposed to a record where you're going to have vocals and so forth? Is it basically the same process and then you throw the solos over it? I mean, I know listening to enough of instrumental music, you kind of got to know where that solo is going to fit in.
It's a little more challenging with instrumental because you don't have a beginning and then you know there's going to be a part happening where the singing's going to take it, so you're like behind the singing. The guitar, in my case, the guitar is the singer. Guitar is the singer, so there's nobody in my way. So it's like instrumental stuff. Guitar is the singer. So when you come into something you would normally call like a verse, the guitar set, the guitar is it. So you gotta, if you just play a bunch of scales, you just play a bunch of fast stuff, well, I try to play something that's kind of hooky, something that you might sing, but then some, you know, it's a lot more experimental and creative for me with instrumental music. It's not the biggest seller, it doesn't have the biggest audiences, you're kind of cutting your audience down a little bit, but what are you doing it for? Are you doing it for,
right,
you know, just to pack the house, or are you doing it to play some cool shit? I mean, you know, sometimes you gotta give and take some. You know.
So, what's next? What else you got cooking?
I'm doing a lot of home recording. I'm working on another instrumental. Tracy G instrumental. So I got a few songs.
It's going to be similar to a Tarantula Ditch?
Yeah, something like that. But I don't know if I'll have a bunch of guitar players. I might just hog it up myself. Yeah. I do a lot of sessions for other people. Record a lot of local bands. Keep busy in my studio. I got a side project that belongs to Paul Alfrey. It's kind of his thing. We both play guitar in it. Michael Drive sings, Randy Oviedo plays bass. It's called, we call it Gale Force, but we're just in the process of writing songs. And we only got a couple of songs going, and you know, I don't know when that's going to be done. Paul knows some people at some labels. He's going to try to, you know, do that thing.
Nice.
So you heard a couple songs earlier.
Oh, they kicked ass too.
Yeah, they're real, it's kind of 80s, 90s slash heavy. What style would you say it is when you heard it? I mean, did it come off like modern metal, or did it come off like 80-ish with a twist?
I would say 80s with a twist.
That's
the first,
it's supposed to be.
The first song almost kind of had a little bit of a power metal feel to it.
All right.
And then the second song that you played that you wrote, more of just a good classic hard rock, but not dated. It sounds very modern.
Okay. Yeah, cool. That's what we're going for, I think.
In the vocals, the guy's Baron Cross.
Mike.
So, yeah, got a good voice. I think it really matches what you're doing.
We think so too, yeah. Does a good job. Randy's on bass. Paul writes some stuff. I write some stuff. Sometimes we write stuff together. And we're just trying to put it all in the same direction and on this 80s with a twist on it, you know, because that's the direction he wanted to go. So I'm like, let's go.
Randy seems kind of like your right-hand man with a lot of the stuff you're doing.
He is. He helps me write some of the stuff, and he's just the right kind of bass player for me. He's the right kind of bass player. His influences are like the Beatles, but I've turned them into this five-string beast, you know, because we don't always need just the Beatles, because I play all kinds of weird shit. So he's just a real open guy, talented guy, knows how to lay down a solid Jimmy Bain style bass line that's just heavy and good to record, sounds good when he's recording. You're not going to find a nicer guy.
He does a cool little thing at the beginning of Drastic Jaw, where he's just kind of like slapping the bass. That's really cool. I dug that.
I don't know what he's doing in that song. But speaking of that song, though, that's Carl Jaw playing guitar, doing the guitar solo. That guy is real creative, really cool. That solo is really different in that song. The song's sort of, it's in 7/8, so it's a little bit jazzy. It's a little bit weird. I like that song a lot. That's a cool song.
I'm sure you were like really excited to get everybody you got on here to play on the record with you. Was there one guy that you were like, holy shit, this is going to be so awesome, you were looking so forward to writing the song for and seeing what their input was going to be? Or was it kind of equal, because there's so many different players? Was it more of an equal thing?
Awesome. It was all awesome. Everybody's different. There was a guy or two that I did not get that I was looking for, like Gus G.
Yeah.
I mean, that name's funny to me because my uncle's name is Gus G. I told Gus G that.
Oh, did you?
When I met him. I have an uncle named Gus G. He's laughing. He's laughing. He's such a good player and a nice guy. So, you know, we almost tried to get him. But
we were close.
We couldn't get him. Maybe next one. But there was a couple guys that, like him, that I would have loved to hand over some crazy shit for him, yeah. And but, you know, maybe next time. But all these guys, it was equally, there wasn't any that wasn't fun or, you know. It was obviously a little funner when they were able to come in my studio.
Yeah.
Because they were here. Then, you know, not all of them could come. You know, they live far.
Well, cool. Well, Tracy, what's next for you, man? You said you got the new project. You're working on a new instrumental record.
Yeah,
what is, Tracy G?
Recording the Tracy G.
What about the Tracy G group? Is it just kind of on hold?
Tracy G group is just kind of Tracy G without the group, you know. And my drummer live that I like to use, he's on tour a lot with a few bands, so he's kind of busy. But if I can find an ass-kicking drummer close to him, close to Adrian, around locally, I might do some instrumental type gigs coming up, and maybe if I want a vocals on a couple songs, maybe invite a couple different guys that I've met to do certain songs or something, maybe, but make it mostly about instrumental stuff, because that's where I get to do my thing the most. It's going to be my own thing, other than the other projects I'm in. You know, the Gale Force thing is another project that might do something, and I get asked to do different projects with different guys. I don't know if they're going to come through yet or not, but, you know, I'm just a guy for hire type of guy.
That's awesome, dude. Well, Tracy, before we let you go, is there anything you'd like to tell the fans out there?
Just hope everybody takes care of themselves, keep rocking, keep checking out new tunes, supporting those original groups. Original music is awesome. Something new, something fresh. Keep rocking.
Well, Tracy, well, I want to thank you again, our official third member of the group here. Coming back, letting me in your home, eating some great Mexican food with me. As always, dude, always killer hanging with you. We want to tell all the fans to go to Tracy's site or CD Baby.
TracyG.com.
TracyG.com to check out Tarantula Ditch. It's a killer new instrumental record from Tracy and his friends. Tracy, as always, awesome seeing you, brother, man.
Thanks, dude. Adios.
has been Genghis
and Ragman,
and you've been listening to the Right to Rock podcast, and we appreciate you listening, and we want to give a big thank you to Tracy G, who is the third unofficial member of the group. We appreciate all of his work, especially the Broken Man song, which is the theme song to the Right to Rock podcast.
And also, we're going to give high props to our boys in Sonic X, Adam and Joseph, have lent us 13 to finish the show. So what you're listening to right now is 13 by Sonic X. So check them out and keep checking us out. And horns up.